Unibet. Episode 122. Tom Rowe, Head Coach, Nürnberg Ice Tigers.
A lot of the hockey people were picking us to finish last or second to last and we'd be relegated. I never even thought about it. Not that I didn't want to think about it. I just never thought about it because I just never even thought it was going to be a possibility that we'd be relegated. And I remember Stefan Ustorf sitting in our office looking at the roster and he said, oh my God, he said, we get one big injury, he said, we're going to be in big trouble. You know, we could be sitting in that relegation position. And I said, bite your tongue. I said, we're not going to talk about relegation at all anymore.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Torhänder! Abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht?
Unibet Hockey. O'Clock. There just can't be a season of Unibet Hockey O'Clock without him. One of the dear friends of the podcast. One of the great hockey minds, not only in Europe, but probably in the entire world. He's, of course, Tom Rowe. He's the head coach of the Nürnberg Ice Tigers, and he's now on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Coach Rowe, it's been a long time. So glad to have you back on the show.
Yeah, it has been a long time. It's great to be back with you talking hockey.
You've been having an interesting time because no hockey coach wants to have his season end early or too early. Now, the Nürnberg season ended after playoff round one, as it's called in the DEL, the German Ice Hockey League. You're now having to watch the quarterfinals, exciting series that are going on. But just looking back on the Nürnberg season that unfolded, if there's one word that you'd have to use to summarize what went down, what would that be?
Adversity. We faced a lot of it with at one point and for an extended period of time, probably close to 3 months, we had 8 regulars out of the lineup and guys who played big minutes for us and that were important pieces. So that was the biggest challenge. And we never talked about it in the media. We never talked about it internally. We the only thing we said is, okay, next guy up has got to get the job done. And guys who wanted more ice time were going to get it. And I think that benefited us down the stretch because we put a pretty good stretch together towards the end of the season to, you know, move up in the standings to get a playoff spot. And so that was a good thing. And our young guys, we played our young guys quite a bit this year because, you know, we wanted to develop them. And we had a line of Daniel Leonhardt, who averaged 15 minutes of ice time a night. Ellis Hede, who we got from HIFK in the middle of the season, he was playing with Daniel. And then Dennis Lobach, who was a guy we had here last year. So we put them together as a line, a young line, fast line. And we actually matched them up against Bremerhaven's top line for a couple of periods during our series. And they did a great job. So, you know, the adversity of the injuries was big, and then developing the young guys to get them ready for the playoffs.
It's an interesting trajectory because depending on how you look at the Nürnberg program, one might think that there's a reset button that could be pushed. It could be a rebuild. It could be a competitive rebuild. You already tried to have the young guns haven't played good minutes to maybe prepare them for bigger challenges upcoming in the next year. But I want to go back to you or with you to the early training camp. And of course, training camp's the time where everybody thinks that he's gonna win a championship. But with Nürnberg, it was a little more interesting because everybody knew that one of the legends of the sport in Germany would be retiring after the year with Patrick Reimer. And even though not too many Austrian hockey fans are following the German Hockey League everybody around here knew this is going to be Patrick Reimer's last year. And just heading into the year, how was the general sentiment knowing one of the legends of the sport will have his last year, and we're heading into a season with a lot of unknowns, as it usually happens?
Yeah, I think when we started training camp, he hadn't decided if he was going to retire yet, although everybody kind of thought that's the way he was leaning. So really the training camp and usually or normally the game days and the practices, that just went on as normal. Once we got into December, that's when the talk started heating up a little bit more in Germany, and other teams that we played and other coaches that I talked to, you know, they said, hey, is he going to retire? And, you know, so we'd obviously have a conversation. So that's kind of when it really started taking on a different role, I guess, around the club. And then everybody realized once he made the decision right before January that, you know, he officially announced that he was going to be retiring at the end of the season. That's when I think it hit everybody, coaches, players, staff, front office, that, oh my God, this is it. He's going to be done when the season's over. And then from an emotional standpoint, it was really when we started the playoffs. That's when it really hit a fever pitch, because obviously we all wanted to win regardless, but we really wanted to win and move into the quarterfinals because of Patrick and what he did for us. Certainly for what he did for me when I got here, he was enormous for me. He's probably one of the best guys I've ever coached, from a leadership standpoint, character, the way he showed up for practice every day, doing all this with a really bad back. I mean, the second game, the game we got knocked out in the playoffs, he probably never even should have played. But he got, you know, he had a shot before warm up and they froze it so he could get out there and play. So it was a real tough night, the night we got knocked out. 76-42 at the game. We were totally sold out. I don't think I've seen a crowd as boisterous, and it was sad and happy all at the same time. So that's, I think, from December on, it really started getting to the point where, oh my God, you know, we'd be sitting in the coach's office looking at the roster for next season, and saying that's a huge hole that we're going to have to fill from not only an offensive production standpoint, but the way he played defense. He doesn't get any credit for how he plays defensively. We always had him out there to protect the lead. He was always killing penalties for us. So yeah, when that final buzzer went off, there were a lot of tears in the locker room from everybody.
I want to get to the retirement and the game where it eventually happened in a bit. I want to get to the roster construction as well down the road of this podcast. But as you've been in so many different roles as a coach, as a team official, as a GM, as an advisor, and you've seen so many different leagues. I mean, we're talking about the Continental Hockey League, the American Hockey League, the National Hockey League. We're talking about the Ice Hockey League in Austria. Now, the German Hockey League for a second year in a row. When you're new to or newish to a league, at what point, or is there ever a point where you get the feeling, okay, now I've got a full grasp of the people running the league, of the teams, of the on-ice personnel that makes this go? Was there this point in year two, or is that point still want to be reached in year three or four? Do you ever get a full grasp of a new league?
Yeah, usually I'd say this year is when I got real comfortable with the league. Even last year, you know, the guy I coached with, Manuel Kofler, he helped me out quite a bit because he played in the league. He's been involved in German hockey forever, so he was a huge help to me. But Patrick and I had numerous conversations, more on how to handle certain players on the roster that we had here, guys that you could push, guys that you had a pat on the back. So he really helped me out in that regard. And then whenever I had a question about a team, he always had very accurate assessments and great answers, because he is a hockey junkie. Like, he knows the guys in the Oberliga. He knows the guys in the DEL too, obviously the DEL. So he is your ultimate hockey nerd. He just loves it. And what's even more impressive, at 40 years old, he played, 25 years in the league, watched every single shift of all his games after the game. He never told me, and we only found that out literally about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then, my assistant coach and him are good friends, had an unbelievable relationship. And he came on the bus one day and he said, Patrick and I were talking, and you know he watches all his shifts every night? I said, no, I had no idea. And he said, yeah. He said he goes in and he critiques his own game and gets mad at himself for some of the plays that he made that he thought he shouldn't have made. So that's the type of guy he is. Unbelievable family guy, like incredible family guy, very supportive of his kids and his wife, and never let that get in the way. And that's what impressed me probably more than the hockey player, is how he treats his family, which isn't always the case. And, you know, they definitely are number one, and then the hockey's number two. And so the complete person is what I really enjoyed being around. And being around him, you really do learn a lot. And I think he'll be able to, I know he's going to be able to do whatever he wants. He's going to probably take this year off. He's going to come in and help us out from time to time on what he sees when he's watching our game. So he's going to be a valuable tool to us. But he really wants to sit back and travel with Anya and the kids and spend a lot of quality family time. And he'll know when it's time to get back into it.
Deservedly so, after more than 1,000 games in the German Ice Hockey League. But getting back to the question regarding getting a feel for a league, you coached for 2 years, or roughly 2 years, in the Ice Hockey League. You coached, or you've been coaching now for 2 years in a German Hockey League. And that's a question that a lot of fans are always interested in, how the Ice Hockey League and the German Hockey League compare and contrast. How would you put it?
I think in the most teams in the DEL, you've got pretty much a full line. Well, I'd say three solid lines that they can play all night. Depending on what team you're playing, sometimes there's a pretty good drop off on the fourth line. And that's where, as a coach, you can take advantage of a team, is trying to get your top line out against their fourth line, especially when you're at home. So that was the biggest contrast I saw between here and the Ice Hockey League in Austria, was there's definitely more depth in this league. But what I told guys numerous times, top six lines, or top six players, top two lines, top four D, and most Ice Hockey Austrian league teams definitely could play in this league, or at least a lot of them. And I guess it's good that I was in Austria, because coming to Germany, there's a lot of German general managers who don't want to sign guys out of Austria, because, you know, I'm just going to call a spade. DEL is definitely a better league. But it's the same with Switzerland. Switzerland, the NLA teams don't like signing players from Germany. And I think it's kind of silly, because if you have a good hockey player, what's it matter what league he plays in? Like Rick Schofield's a perfect example. We brought him in this year. Obviously, I knew him and had him in Linz. And, you know, our general manager was all for it, but he said, yeah, but, you know, can he produce in this league? I said, believe me, he can produce. I said, just give him a chance. So we brought him in, did a phenomenal job. I think he only played 38 games because he got a little bumped up. He had to sit out a couple. He scored 14 goals, I believe. And that's not even a full season. Okay. And so he produced, and he did what I knew he'd do. Plus, he was our best faceoff guy. One night he had 98% faceoff winning percentage. That's how good he was. And that's why I told our guys, and I told general manager stuff Neustorp. I said, he'll help us big time on penalty killing. And I said, he's unbelievable on faceoffs. And he did exactly what I thought, and I was not surprised. Now we're going to try and sign him again for next year.
I want to get to Rick Schofield in a bit, but the German Hockey League and the Penny DEL, as it's officially called, is an interesting one because it does have relegation in place, something that we're not used to in the Ice Hockey League. So if you're having a season from hell, if you're, for whatever reason, down in the standings, you could be relegated. Now, the German Hockey League will lose a team deliberately after this year anyways, and depending on who comes up from the DEL2, there might be two teams going down to the DEL2. And Nuremberg, with all due respect, probably not having the biggest budget of the league and probably not as many possibilities and different ways to go than the quote-unquote larger organizations. How do you head into a season where you know you might be relegated if everything goes wrong? Is that something in the back of your head, or do you try to strive for greatness and go for the championship anyways?
No. When I got here for training camp, we looked at the board and we looked at the number of inexperienced guys we had. It was more than, well, it was probably half the roster, because even the guys who played with us last year, they were still only 20, 21. So we didn't have as much experience. Our budget was the second lowest budget for player salaries, second lowest budget in the league. Biedingheim was the lowest. But I honestly, I knew we were being, a lot of the hockey people were picking us to finish last or second to last and we'd be relegated. I never even thought about it. My mind just, not that I didn't want to think about it, I just never thought about it, because I just never even thought it was going to be a possibility that we'd be relegated. And I remember Stefan Ustorf sitting in our office looking at the roster, and he said, oh my God, he said, we get one big injury, he said, we're going to be in big trouble. You know, we could be sitting in that relegation position. And I said, bite your tongue. I said, we're not going to talk about relegation at all anymore. And so, no, as a coaching staff, we went into it with the mindset of being in the playoffs, being a top 16. I love playing young guys. They bring a lot of energy. But I said to the young guys around December, I said, okay, you're not young anymore. You've all been getting regular ice time. And now you got to step it up and start delivering for us. And they did, to their credit. They really took off at that point. But the relegation, I never gave it a thought. And I don't read the German papers because I can't read German. But I was getting all the feedback from the coaching staff and, well, my assistant coach, Manuel Kofler. And he said, yeah, they all have this pick for last or second and last. I said, well, they'll be surprised when we're in the playoffs, and that'll be a credit to the players. And the players are awesome. It's a great group. Very similar to the group I had in Linz, real character, worked their asses off every day. And we had a ton of fun. They party hard and they play hard. They show up every single day. So that's the good part.
I've, of course, pulled a couple of brains to dedicate themselves to everything that goes on with the Penny DL. And a lot of those people that I questioned were impressed with the way Nuremberg played, Nuremberg performed, probably sharing the sentiment that you just put out to the listeners right here, with a lot of people maybe jotting Nuremberg in one of the last two places in the league, and you comfortably made the round one of the playoffs, as it's called, the round preceding the quarterfinals. But it will be an interesting offseason. We knew beforehand that Patrick Eimer's not going to be part of the 23-24 Ice Tigers. We've got Mebos, we've got McLeod, who are not coming back. Probably some more players. And obviously it would be foolish to not try to access your vast kind of experience as regards player personnel and development. Stefan Ustorf doing a great job as a sports manager. You as a head coach, but also with the personnel background. At what point did you start to look ahead to the 23-24 season, but still knowing that there's a lot of games to be played in the 22-23 season? How does it work?
Yeah, we you're doing that all the time. You're looking at the guys you're going to lose, and we're losing Nick Welsh, Gregor McLeod, Tim Sheehy, Ole Mebus, and obviously Patrick's retirement. So those are five big holes. So we really started talking about that back in November. And, you know, names that I would get from friends in North America, I'd pass on to Stefan to, you know, put on his list. And then he went on a scouting trip in November in North America. Then he went on another scouting trip to California to catch the teams out there in the American Hockey League. He was over there probably about 3 weeks ago. And then he does a lot of scouting in Germany. So you're always looking ahead, you know, well in advance, a year before for sure, because you know you're going to lose guys. And we're, like I said, we're not a big budget team, and our better players we know are going to get, you know, calls from some of the better teams that have bigger budgets and more money to spend. But you're constantly looking for the future. And, you know, if a guy's coming up on the contract and we want to get, if he's an older guy or maybe just not performing, you know, we start putting names in place to go after, whether it's a team player in the DEL. And I know Stefan went to Vienna and he went to Innsbruck to watch some games there and, you know, see if there were some guys that we could pull out of the ice hockey league. So, yeah, it's, you know, we'd even have conversations in training camp. Hey, this guy's probably not coming back next year, so we got to start thinking who we want to plug in there.
It is so interesting to get a feel from every club and club official and person working there what kind of player might be fitting, because you always hear the cliche answer: we're looking for great character and we're looking for hard workers. Every hockey team in the world does that. But when we go back to Rick Schofield, what made you certain that his character and his skill set, and we all know in the Ice Hockey League, worked perfectly well? He was one of the difference makers that we had the past couple of more than a half decade in the league. But what made you certain that his skill set would also work in the Penny DL?
His hockey intelligence, one. He's a very smart player. I knew I could put him with anybody on the roster, and I mean anybody, and he would make them better. His face-off percentage has always been very, very good. And that's where I wasn't even worried about the offense. You know, I said to Ustorf, I said, Usti, if he comes in and produces, that's great. I think he will. I said, but it's more his poise, the way he thinks the game. His face-off percentage, I said, he'll be our best face-off guy by far, and he was. So those are the areas I looked at. And, yeah, I mean, we all want hard work and character guys. That goes without saying. And if you have a strong locker room with really good leadership and good chemistry, you can bring in maybe one or two knuckleheads who aren't of the same mentality, and they're not going to disrupt the room. So I do think it's imperative that you have a lot of character, and then it's up to the coaches to make sure they're working hard. And, you know, how we practice, it's pretty intense and we practice fast, and that isn't for everybody. And the systems we use, we vary back and forth from a 1-2-2 to a 2-1-2. And next year will probably just be a strict 1-2-2, but aggressive 1-2-2. And that system's not for everybody. And so we're looking for guys who can skate and think, and you can't get everybody like that. So we will have a couple of guys who are a little, maybe average to below average speed, but those guys, they're going to have to be able to think the game and have poise and be able to make plays and produce. So the system, and Usti and I talk quite a bit about the system we want to play going forward. But I said to him, I said, hey, listen, I said, the system's not for everybody. So we got to make sure the players we bring in can think, and I will push guys in practice and get on them. So you got to make sure mentally a guy can handle that. Now, I think you and I have talked about this in the past. I can't be busting their balls every single day of the week, because then they're just going to tune you out. They'll quit, and it'll be a bad atmosphere in the locker room. But I do want to make sure we get guys, when they're not pulling their weight, you can pull them in the office, have a pretty straightforward talk with them, and tell them to get their butt in gear. So I think Usti's done a great job of getting those character guys for us. And that's, coaching's not easy. Playing's not easy. But when you have a good group of guys like we have, it definitely makes it easier.
And it speaks volumes as regards Rick Schofield that a person that's going to be 36 years old on opening day next year is someone you want to bring back. So there's that. And I just want to have one last question as regards the outlook on the new season, because I've already handed out these kind of big terms that you usually hear in hockey. Is it a rebuild? Is it a competitive rebuild? Are we competing? What's kind of the label for the Nuremberg Ice Tigers going into the offseason, heading into 23-24?
Well, we want to play very fast. We want to put a lot of pressure on teams in all three zones. But the thing that we've got to become better at is controlling the puck, controlling the play, be more of a possession team. And we were pretty good at it this year. I thought two things we worked on and two things we really wanted to be a much better team at was defensive zone coverage. And we were, even though we weren't one of the top teams in goals against, I thought our D zone coverage was solid most of the time. And we wanted to be a real aggressive, hard forechecking team. I thought we were just okay in that area. I didn't think we were as good as we should have been. But I thought our breaking the puck out of our end clean was very, very good, a lot better than it was last year. So those are the things we're looking like. Our forecheck's got to be constant next year. Our D-zone coverage has got to be really good. And then, we'll build. I mean, we're known for a very fast transition team. A lot of coaches said we were the fastest transition team in the league, which quite a compliment when you're in the league with guys like Red Bull and Mannheim and Ingolstadt and Straub. Those are high-end skilled teams. So, I think the style we play, the players like. We don't have a problem recruiting free agents. If we lose a free agent, it's more over money. But I think we've built a reputation of a good place to play, work hard. The guys have fun, a great city, great building. I mean, our fan base is amazing. I think we had 7 crowds this year, over 7,000, and they hadn't had that here for 20 years. I think back in the Rob Wilson days when Thomas Sabo owned the team. So the future's bright. We need to, hopefully we get a bigger budget this year to get more players, get more depth. That's going to be huge because we do need to take the momentum from last year and this year and be a top 6 team next year. And that's the goal, is to be a top 6 team. And I do think that's realistic.
One of the bigger topics, I'd imagine, in the locker room and during meetings with your coaching staff, for sure, would have been special teams. Something that never really got right during the season, and it just shows how incredibly hard it is to get it right. And normally, or in most cases, responsibilities regarding special teams fall onto the assistant coach's shoulders. Now, I know because of previous conversations that we had that you've been raving regarding Manuel Kofler and everything he brings to the table. How did the responsibilities for special teams look like on your coaching staff? And at what point did you know, Jesus, something's not right here. We need to get this somehow back on track.
Yeah, it was because last year we were a good penalty killing team. I can't remember where we finished. I think it was close to top five, if not in the top five. I think I wanted to become ultra aggressive on it this year. And once the puck went on the wall, we had three men pressing and they weren't comfortable doing it. We got out of sync and we got scored against early in the season. Even in training camp, the guys were tentative when they were supposed to go. I don't think, and it, yeah, Emmanuel Kofler is responsible for PK, but him and I sit down every single day and go through it. You know, pretty much he presents it, but it's both of us talking about it. So that was probably more my fault than his, because I wanted to be aggressive. We just never got the guys comfortable enough to be aggressive. And then we started going pretty good with it maybe a month or so ago. But next year, I already told them, I said, next year when we come back, we are going back to the three-point pressure on the wall when the puck's on the wall to try and kill plays in the corner. So when one guy goes, everybody goes. So we got to do a better job of coaching that and teaching it. It's not the players, because it was pretty much the same guys we had last year. And we were a good PK team last year. This year, you know, it just happens. You know, we had a ton of injuries. You know, the injuries didn't help, because then you're putting guys in that aren't used to killing. And then, you know, in our goaltending, you know, they have to take some responsibility of this too. They didn't come up with the big saves when they needed to, and that's all part of it. So it was a combination, I would think, more on the me as the head coach, and our goaltending was the biggest problem. So we just gonna need to, we're going to spend, we spend a lot of time on habits anyway, but next year we're going to spend even more time on stopping on pucks, leading with the stick more, getting in shot lanes. Our forwards weren't very good at blocking shots. Matter of fact, we were terrible at it. So that's going to be an emphasis of that next year, which will help the penalty killing. But no, we'll rebound. And then our power play, I run that exclusively. You know, Manny will sit there with me and we'll talk about it. And I just could not get the guys to shoot the puck. And I said, you guys want to make these fancy plays that are not realistic. I said, it's got to be two or three passes and shoot it. I said, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but we're not a high-end skilled team. And high-end skilled teams, the best way to work on the power play is move it quick and shoot it. And then we finally did it the last 10 games. And then in the playoffs, and our power play was running over 30%. So we were joking around one day after practice. We had a day off the next day, so we brought some beer into the room and some lunch for the guys. And I said, for Christ's sakes, I said, it's taken me almost a year to get you guys to start shooting the puck. And I told them, I said, you go watch any National Hockey League power play, Connor McDavid included, and it's two or three passes and they're shooting the puck. So finally they got it through their heads. And so that'll be another emphasis, is we'll spend a crazy amount of time on power play and penalty killing. But we got the guys. I mean, you got the advantage. You got one guy off the ice for the other team, so you should be able to score more goals than we did. But we were absolutely dreadful, and that's more my fault, because I couldn't get the message through quick enough.
Probably should have backed this up a little bit, because it's not about finger pointing, of course. It's just about trying to get relatable information for people that follow the sport but don't necessarily understand special teams coaching, and I'd include myself in there. And obviously, just to give listeners an idea of how the special teams on Nuremberg fared in the past season. The power play clocked in at a 16.03% according to the Unibet stats. Only Dusseldorf was worse, but of course Dusseldorf is in the playoffs, so there's that. And in terms of penalty killing, I have to say it, remarkably bad, 72.4% on the PK, according to the Unibet stats as well. But still, there were two teams that had a worse percentage. So the special teams nowhere near where I like you have them to be. And there were injuries, different personnel. You try to mix and mash. At what point do you as a head coach run out of solutions? Have you ever run out of solutions or things that it did he want it to try, or was it just a mixture of all the things that it that you mentioned, aka the perfect storm?
Yeah, I think this year was the perfect storm. We just didn't have anything clicking at any time, as far as, especially the penalty killing. We got toasted on that quite a bit. But, you know, I think we have the solutions. We're teaching the same stuff as last year. And again, I can't remember exactly what the percentage was, but it was pretty good. But I do think a couple of times with bad luck, you know, we'd be in the shot lane. The guy would whiff on his shot. It would go off his skate onto their stick and then the neck. So that happened once in a while. But now the solutions, we kept working at it, talking about it. We'd have discussions with our veteran guys who are out there. And I said to Manny, I said, we're going to use the young kids to kill penalties because they got to get the experience. And he was all on board with that. But it definitely cost us because of their inexperience. But I said, by the time we roll into the playoffs, you know, they should be able to kill and do a good job for us. So that was part of it. We wanted to make sure the young kids were getting out there. And it cost us some games some nights, not because of the young guys, but, you know, we wanted to use them and get them that experience. So I think it was partially perfect storm. I think it was maybe us not being demanding enough to get in shot lanes. So, you know, every year you learn something new as a coach. And I've been doing this a long time, but you can still learn new things. So, you know, but I think fans watching hockey today, they don't want to see a slow moving team. They want pressure. They want fast. And I don't care. The size of the rink over here is bigger than North America, but you can still be aggressive on your penalty killing. You just got to read the situation and be smart when you're going to go and when you can't go.
Coach, after having just quoted a couple of the Unibet stats, I think it's the time to mention that Unibet still has a special offer for all new customers. It's a 400% welcome bonus. Just use the promo code hockey minus bonus while putting 10 euros into your new account for the first time and receive 40 euros for free. That's right, for free. More details, as always, in the show notes of this podcast. And it is, of course, Unibet by players for players. If we turn our attention and I'd eventually probably get to everything that happened in playoff round one, still to the ongoing DEL playoffs. We got four great series ongoing. We're recording this conversation on a Monday. Tomorrow, Tuesday, is game day number four. No team can or will be eliminated on Tuesday. So on Wednesday, when this program and this podcast obviously sees the day of light, all eight teams are still in contention. Which series of the four has captured your attention the most?
Well, I think the Red Bull series, Munich and Bremerhaven. I mean, the fact that Bremerhaven went up 2-0 in that series and now they got beat yesterday 7-1. But that got everybody's attention because Bremerhaven played well against us. We definitely had some grade A scoring chances. We couldn't finish. And their goaltender was unbelievable and has been unbelievable. I think his save percentage going into yesterday's game was close to 97%. So in the playoffs, you need a good goalie. That's what gets you to the promised land. And he's been doing a great job. So that would be the biggest surprise is that series. And obviously, Munich is definitely going to be a team that can win it. But the other team, and I think they've done a phenomenal job this year, is Timmy Regan in Ingolstadt. He's the new sport director there. And Mark French was coach of the year this year in the DEL. He's done a great job getting that team on the same page. And that's a team to watch because I really do think that Ingolstadt can win the championship as well. So I do think it could end up being Red Bull and Ingolstadt in the finals. And that'll be tremendous hockey if that ends up being that way.
Should have backed us up too, because a lot of people probably don't know the four series and how they are looking as we record this on Monday. So please check the scores on Tuesday or Wednesday when the pod comes out. But as of right now, it's Bremerhaven, the 8th seed, leading Red Bull Munich by 2-1 in the best of 7 quarterfinal series. It's Ingolstadt being up 2-1 against Düsseldorf, the good old DEG. It is the two longtime powerhouses, Mannheim and Cologne, going at it. Cologne leading the series 2-1. And it is a battle of head coaches with Austrian or previous Austrian experience, with Tom Pokal's Straubing Tigers against Mike Stewart's Grizzlies Wolfsburg. Stewart and his Grizzlies are leading 2-1. This is how it stands on Monday, March 20th. Could be looking a whole lot of different in 2 days of time. Just looking at those series and looking at how tight it is, how many game sevens are we going to see in the quarters? Wild guess.
I would think one. I think Straubing Wolfsburg could go 7. I think Mannheim Cologne could go 7. Obviously, Red Bull Bremerhaven, that could go 6 or 7. And Ingolstadt, I do think they'll probably, my guess is they'll probably do it in 5 or 6. Dusseldorf's a team that just doesn't go away. And you can get a lot of scoring chances on them when they get their offense going. When they rush the puck into the offensive zone, Dusseldorf, they get a lot of offense off of that. When you force them to dump it in, they don't get as much offense. So we played them. Some nights we were okay at it, others we weren't. We would force them to dump it in as much as we could, and they didn't get a whole lot of offense. Every time they carry it in, they would get scoring chances off of that. I think last year when we played them, I counted 60 entries into our end, and we got them to dump it in, I think, close to 55, and they didn't get a whole lot of offense off of that. So they're a very line-rushed, dangerous team. So that's a series that – and then you've got Ingolstadt, who is just an unbelievable – puck possession team. Their habits are excellent. They stop on every single puck. If you make a little move and, you know, get away from the forecheck, he's stopping and reattacking you. So they get a lot of turnovers from playing that way. And they're very, very confident group. They've been very confident all year. So, and they get great goaltending as well. So I think Ingolstadt probably has just a little too much offense for Dusseldorf. So I think that series could be no more than 6 games.
Kind of reminds me of the way Mark French's team in Fribourg-Gottron play when I covered the Swiss league. So sounds like a team that could be going all the way. And coincidentally, I just got fresh odds from our good friends over at Unibet. Red Bull Munich still being the odds on favorite for the championship with odds of 1 to 2.1. Ingolstadt coming in second with odds of 1 to 5.5. And the Cologne Sharks with odds of 1 to 8, a relatively distant third. I gave you the top three teams odds-wise. From the 5 quarterfinal participants that I didn't mention, who do you think could be the dark horse to upset them all to win the championship? Who's got all the tools in the making?
Mannheim has all the tools. I mean, there. Some people are going to say, "Well, that's an easy pick because they're, you know, big budget team." But they've had an up and down season. If they put it all together, they're as difficult a team to play against in this league as anybody. I think we went in there into Mannheim. I'm not quite sure. I think it was early in the season, and we were lucky to touch the puck, and they were. They had NHL-sized players. They were physical. They were hard on our guys. And we just couldn't generate much. So if they put it all together, they if you want to call them a dark horse, okay. I don't think they are. But if they can put it all together, you know, they'd be very dangerous because they got big bodies and they're physical when they're playing that style. I think against Cologne, in Cologne in the first period in game 2, Cologne didn't have any shots on net. It was 0. And I thought it was a missed I thought it was a mistake in the box score, but I talked to their GM. He said, no, he said, we finally played a real good playoff hockey style game. So if they can continue to do that, you know, they definitely could win it as well. But they wouldn't be the favorite right now based on the season they've had.
But see, that what makes you so great, not only as a guest on the podcast, but also on a future pundit, because Mannheim is only in terms of odds 0.5 points behind Cologne. Cologne's odds for a championship 1-8, and Mannheim's 1-8.5. And obviously, I need to mention that Mannheim also has a head coach with a past in the Austrian League with Bill Stewart. He's back, kind of never went away, and it's going to be an interesting series, and we're all going to be excited to see how this one turns out. We're not there yet in the German Hockey League, coach, but we'll have a Game 7 in the Ice Hockey League. Your old team, now run by your old strength and conditioning coach, Phil Lucas, is heading into a Game 7. Now, that's going to take place tomorrow. By Wednesday, we'll obviously know if Linz made it or Bolzano made it. We could be recording two different versions now where you say why Bolzano won or Linz won, but that'd be kind of cheating a little bit. So how much are you still following the Ice Hockey League? What went through your head when you saw that Linz as an 8 seed is going, or a 7 seed to be technically correct, is going head-to-head with the bully of the regular season? And how have you followed everything that's transpired since you leaving the program?
Oh, yeah, I know. I keep a real close eye on it. I'll talk to Mark Zooks once in a while. I'll talk to Jürgen Penker once in a while. I still stay in touch with Christian Perfola through text. And like my wife and I talk about, and Rick Schofield, because he obviously came into Nuremberg, you know, we all said it was an awesome place. And I've even had guys on Nuremberg ask me, you know, if I go to the Austrian League, what cities would you recommend? And right away, Linz is number one. I said, so, yeah, was I surprised that they did what they did against Bolzano? No, because they started out the season really strong. And I know Phil put a real good structure in place, and all the feedback I got from guys, and I talked with Brian Lebler from time to time, he said, you know, it's a lot more organized now. The atmosphere around the locker room is a lot better. I think the franchise itself, from a business point of view, is starting to get back on track now that that mess from before is all over. But I keep real close eye on it, because when I retire from coaching, Linz will be one of the first teams that comes to mind, because I loved it there so much. It got treated so well by everybody. But I'm not surprised it's a Game 7, really not. I know they don't have a ton of depth yet because they're building up the business side of things and probably don't have the budget yet to get back to where they used to be. But in Game 7, you know this, you've followed hockey a long time, anything can happen, absolutely anything. So I think the pressure's on Bolzano because they finished first place. Everybody expects them, and I've talked with a lot of people who said they should win the championship, but now all the heat is on them to come out and deliver. And Linz can go in there loose and free and excited about knocking them out. And I definitely think they can knock out Bolzano for sure. I'm not saying they will, but they definitely can.
We'll see how it goes, but it's going to be interesting. And in the Ice Hockey League, we're going to look for the last semifinals participant. We're nowhere near that in the National Hockey League. And listeners of this program, I've known you for a while as someone who's also paying close attention to everything that goes on in the National Hockey League. And one thing that comes to mind in this season, apart from record-setting offensive performances, especially after the so-called that puck era, is a tremendous wildcard race in the Eastern Conference. We're talking about six teams within 9 points vying for two spots in the wildcard race. If you might want to include Detroit, we're talking about seven teams. They're not out there yet. What's your favorite storyline this year regarding the National Hockey League?
Well, my favorite is Buffalo. I love what they're doing there. I know they've fallen off the playoff pace, but I think if you watch Buffalo any given night, you know, they're exciting, they're fast, they're skilled. That reminds me a lot of the Carolina Hurricanes when Roddy Brind'Amour took them over. And looking at this now, they got 72 points, so they're 6 points out of a playoff spot. And then you got Ottawa and Detroit. For me, I love Buffalo. Love watching them, love their skill, love watching Thompson. And a funny story about Thompson, when I was GM in Florida, you know, everybody thinks the GM picks all the players in the draft, but it's really the scouts who run the table, really go to bat for their players. And we had a discussion, and I leaned heavily on our European scout because he wanted to pick Henrik Borgstrom. But our Minnesota scout followed the college hockey group, and he was pushing Thompson big time. So Henrik Borgstrom hasn't exactly made it, and Thompson's tearing it up this year, and he did a good job last year. So I think Buffalo, for me, is the story of the league. They've done a great job with Kevin Adams and Jason Kamanos as GM and associate GM, and they put a plan in place, and they've followed it, and they've stuck to it, and they've been disciplined with it. And I think that's going to be a team like the New Jersey Devils. What they're doing this year, I think Buffalo could be doing the same thing. Probably, I don't think next year, but probably the year after that. So that, for me, that's the team that I love watching. Surprises anything by Florida. I thought Florida would have done, you know, more. But, you know, Paul Maurice goes in, new coach, new systems, probably a little different style than what they were playing before. They wanted to put a little more defense into their systems. I don't think it's worked out yet. But if they, all you got to do is get into the playoffs. And once you get in, anything can happen. So, but Buffalo, for me, I love watching Buffalo, love watching Detroit. I think those are two teams that are really up and coming.
Two more questions on the National Hockey League, and then we'll round this conversation out. One about the Buffalo Sabres. If we just look at Tage Thompson, how much of a unicorn is he? I mean, we're talking about a centerman who's 6'7", 218 pounds. Back in your day, if you had a human being like that opposite you on a face of circle, what would you have thought?
Back when I played, if you were 6'7", you're either going to be a defenseman or you're going to be a tough guy. You weren't going to be a skilled guy, but I think that lends back to the USA hockey program. They're regarded right now as probably in North America the best program at developing skill. They spend a lot of time teaching guys skill, working on it, and I think Thompson is a product of that. And the fact that he's 6'7" and can do what he does with the puck and as quick as he does, and I've seen him put moves on guys, and it opens the ice up for him to make passes to guys who are wide open. It's crazy that he can move like he does at 6'7". So that's what I'm talking about. Those are types of guys you can build a championship team around. But he is he's elite, and people paying their money to go watch him in Buffalo are definitely getting their money's worth.
Just for comparison's sake, 42 goals in 69 games. And European listeners, of course, can really use North American metrics. 6'7 corresponds to 2 meters and 218 corresponds to 99 kilograms. Last question regarding the other conference, the Western Conference. And you can go either way. Biggest surprise or biggest disappointment? What's it going to be?
Biggest surprise or biggest disappointment would be Colorado. You know, it's always tough rebounding off of a Stanley Cup year, but I, you know, they're moving up in the standings now, and they'll be in the playoffs for sure. So that would be the biggest disappointment. They got a great, great roster. But again, once again, the playoffs, they'll be re-energized. But the biggest surprise for me is Seattle. I never expected them to do what they did, especially after the year they had last year. They gave up a lot of goals defensively. They really looked out of sync. But give Ronnie Francis a ton of credit.
Good friend of yours.
Yeah. A lot of teams probably would have fired their coach, but he's very patient with coaches, which is good. He's an incredible personnel guy, and he is one GM. Excuse me. He's one GM that is constantly on the road scouting. So his work ethic is off the charts. Incredibly bright, very detailed, very thorough in everything he does. So I'm glad that Seattle has done what they've done, and they are definitely a surprise. I think everybody would say that. And the fan base in Seattle is amazing. You know, they love that team, and they're really supporting it 100%. So, yeah, that would definitely be my surprise pick.
Interesting, because I would have picked you for the Calgary Flames as one of the biggest disappointments, but Colorado Avalanche, also one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, I think the Calgary situation is a funny one, because that was a and I do think that's what's messed up Florida a little bit, because Mackenzie Weegar and Jonathan Huberdeau were not only great players on the ice, but instrumental in the chemistry in that locker room. Mackenzie Weegar is a funny, funny guy, and he keeps everybody loose, and he's obviously a great hockey player. And Tkachuk, obviously, I think he's at 90-plus points right now. But that, I don't think that trade's worked out for either team the way they thought it was going to. And again, it was a big-time trade with great players, and I think in the end, it'll get both teams to where they want to go. But I think a lot of people underestimated the impact of losing Weegar and Huberdeau in Florida. I think that was a huge blow to a lot of guys in that locker room. And it's nothing against Tkachuk, because he's a great guy, great player. It's just that Weegar and Huberdeau grew up in that franchise and loved it there. And I'm sure that had a real negative effect on the team.
See, 100% agree on it. And I was kind of curious how Weegar would fare. I thought it might be the gift from the hockey gods for the Calgary franchise. Never really panned out, but still great player. As we go back to something you said earlier and do round out this conversation, you said every year there's something you learn as a head coach or as a person involved with hockey. What was the one thing that you are taking away as a learning from this year?
The biggest thing is, and Manny came up to me one day after a game, literally out in the hallway, and he said, "You were exceptionally calm tonight." And he said, literally from the meetings in the morning till after the game, and we did win the game. It was a huge comeback win for us in Isabel. And I said, "Really?" I said, "Because I really have been calm all year." He said, "Yeah, I know you have been." He said, "But you were joking around literally from the beginning of the day to the end. Even on the bench, you were joking around, guys, when the game got a little tense. You were having fun with the guys." And he said, "It just kept everybody loose." So that would be the biggest thing, is I've got to do more of that. I was very quiet on the bench this year. I had my moments where I got on guys, but I was extremely quiet, because I said to the guys, "Hey, all the work's going to get done in practice, and then it's up to you to go execute it. And hopefully as coaches, we did a good enough job of giving you directions, teaching what we wanted to get through to you." But you know, that's a great question. It was enjoy it more and joke around a little bit more with the guys and just keep them loose. And he's absolutely right. I definitely saw a difference. And from that day on, I tried to do the same thing for the rest of the season. Not always easy to do, but I think it's something that I have to adopt for next year and do it right from the beginning.
Hope you can continue doing this. So glad that you took such extensive time talking about hockey again. So glad to having you back, or having had you back on the program. Wish you all the best for an interesting off season, for an interesting upcoming season with the Nuremberg Ice Tigers. Could be talking hockey with you for hours and hours. Hope to be doing this again sometime soon.
Yeah, well, listen, it's always a pleasure talking with you, and I love, and I've told you this before, you asked some of the best questions of anybody I've been asked in hockey. So that's a credit to you. I know you love the sport. And when I my time in Austria, you were very well respected by every hockey person. So
Coach, blushing.
It's a credit to you too. That's why you probably get a lot of guests that want to come on and talk to you.
Still blushing. Should be about the guests. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt. Unibet Hockey on the Clock.